At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
Welcome to this week's Behind the Headlines podcast. I'm your host, Matt Montgomery. Katie O'Connell is on vacation this week. Coming up, we'll take a look at a bike competition that's coming to the state, and the Zac Brown Band rolled into town this week. We'll give you a behind-the-scenes look at their infamous Eat and Greet. Before we get to those stories, let's take a look at Governor Scott Walker's hometown of Delavan. Editor Greg Borowski and reporter Mary Spacuzza discuss how the growing Latino population in Delavan ties into Walker's presidential bid.
The city of Delavan is interesting from a whole lot of perspectives, not the least of which is Governor Walker, and this is one of his hometowns, and all the demographic changes that are going on there with a more and more Hispanic population, that those kind of mesh real neatly in your story, Mary. But can you start by just telling me what drew you to this story? What made it an interesting area for you to pursue as a journalist?
Well, it's funny because I actually used to go there as a little girl. My aunts would take my brothers and sisters and I, and it was kind of the place we'd go to get like sandwiches and ice cream on hot sunny days. And I hadn't been there in years. And then a few years ago, I actually had run into someone with a taco truck in a different town and asked where they were from, and they said Delavan. Which was surprising to me because when I was there, I don't really remember seeing Latinos, but that was probably back, not to age myself too much, but that was probably back in the early 80s. So my husband and I made a trip back, and I went to that same kind of historic main street, Walworth Avenue, that runs through town, and it had completely changed. It used to be, you know, ice cream shops and little sweet little ladies eating you know, chicken salad sandwiches, and looking down the street, there was taquerias and dulcerias, ice cream places, and Mexican grocery stores, and Western wear, and more taquerias, and it looked completely different, and it was really surprising to me, but I just thought maybe it was me, and then I started looking up statistics and saw, like, wow, Delavan-Darien School District has the highest percentage of Latino students of any school district in the state. And that was also a surprise, so it kind of seemed to confirm just my impression from being downtown that the Latino population there had really grown exponentially in recent years.
Delavan, of course, is a very important, you know, touchstone for Scott Walker. He moved there after Iowa as a young boy when his father became a pastor. Talk a little bit, if you could, about how Delavan plays a role for Walker in his biography and as he's expressing that to the country. It's sort of a touchstone for him, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It comes up a lot as he's traveling the country ahead of his really all but certain presidential run. He talks about moving there. I believe he was 10 years old in third grade, lived there until he graduated from high school before he headed off to Marquette University. His father got a job as a pastor there. He talks about the values he learned in Delavan, talks about how he wasn't born into, you know, fame and fortune like some of the other candidates, but that he learned the importance of family and faith and hard work. He obviously was involved in the community. He started doing sermons from the pulpit. He was, you know, Eagle Scout there, yeah. And as we've heard maybe a couple times. So it really is, he mentions it frequently. I can't think of the last speech where Delavan and growing up in a small town in Wisconsin didn't come up. You know, it also was close to Representative Paul Ryan, one of his obviously close friends and fellow Republicans from Wisconsin, and they talk about growing up in small towns in southeastern Wisconsin. So, yes, he mentions it a lot.
One of the things I think that makes your story really interesting is that immigration is an issue that the governor has, I want to say, struggled with, or at least hasn't found his footing as well as he has on other issues in the campaign. How do people there view the governor, particularly through that prism of his stance on illegal immigration?
You know, obviously the governor has, his positions on immigration have changed recently. He used to support a path to citizenship. Now he says he no longer supports amnesty. He went as far to say that people should return to their country of origin to apply for citizenship, which a lot of people have compared to Mitt Romney's self-deportation comments that were not popular a few years ago. And a lot of people in Delavan or who work with immigrants in Delavan say that that kind of proposal to go back to your country of origin is unrealistic, that it would tear families apart, pointing to some of these families that may have someone here who is here illegally, but also children who are citizens, or a grandparent who is here illegally, but then two generations of citizens, or people who've been living here illegally for years that actually have been in the U.S. longer than they were in their home country. They also say it's out of touch and would hurt the economy. So they point to that, you know, impressive number of Latino-owned stores in places like Delavan and say, you know, those would close. Windows would be boarded up. A lot of businesses had closed and before the Latino shops moved in. And they're saying that, you know, I don't think we want to have businesses closing and jobs lost in our current economy.
If you're interested in more in this story, pick up Sunday's edition of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You can also find this story and more at jsonline.com/Scott Walker. In music news...
Guys, my name is Chef Rusty. We've been cooking for you today. Who's hungry? Good. We're going to go over the menu, but first of all, everybody give it up for my buddy. Give it up for Mr. Zach Brown.
Online producer Aaron Coy joined us for a look at how the Zac Brown Band connects with its fans. The band hosts an eat-and-greet with about 200 fans before every show. Chef Rusty Hamlin, a friend of Zac Brown, cooks the meal in his giant mobile kitchen, Cookie.
They had like a whole buffet line of Chef Rusty's food, and you had to walk through, and they just shoveled it all on. You could talk to him if you wanted to. I don't know any other band that would bring in the whole crew just to sit and hang out with their fans in a very relaxed atmosphere. It's not formal. It's very calm. Drinks, local food.
While Chef Rusty specializes in Southern-style food, he often uses local ingredients to make such dishes. In Milwaukee, he swung by Ascendix and the Walker's Point Food Market.
This is actually the first weekend that they were open. You know, I had to catch that. So I went out there and I found some really cool strawberries that just came out of the ground and those sugar snaps that we put in the salad and some really cool vegetables.
Aaron said the experience overall made her feel more connected to the band, especially after a disappointing experience last year.
I bought tickets last year for their concert at Summerfest, and I couldn't go because of a work-related project that came up, and so I had to sell my tickets at the last minute, and I was a little bummed, but this whole experience kind of paid off for it.
Aaron was able to tour Chef Rusty's mobile kitchen. You can see a video of that at jsonline.com/multimedia. And our whole music team has been covering Summerfest. For highlights of their coverage, including reviews and photos, visit jsonline.com/Summerfest. Coming up later, Matt Velasquez chats with Brewers beat writer Tom Hodgecourt about possible trade scenarios. Also next week, we've got a business story from reporter Rick Rommel. Rick is taking a look at expanding bike markets in Milwaukee. He talked to Katie this week before she left for vacation.
The story is about the changing competitive scene among bicycle retailers in Milwaukee. And the big change is Eric's coming to Milwaukee. Eric's is a dealer out of Bloomington, Minnesota, Twin Cities area, that now has 22 stores and will open their 23rd this fall in Milwaukee. That'll give them 4 stores in Milwaukee. 2 years ago, they had none. So, believe it or not, a 23-store chain is a large chain in the world of specialty bike dealers. This is a highly fragmented business, a lot of mom-and-pop operations. And it's also kind of a reportedly, a business where people are sort of like gentlemanly to each other. I was told it's unusual for a large, I put that in quotes, large dealer like Eric's to challenge another large dealer in the other dealer's market. That being Wheel and Sprocket in Milwaukee. Wheel and Sprocket has been the largest bike dealer in the Milwaukee area for decades. And they also have 4 stores here. They have 7 total. So now Wheel and Sprocket and all the other bike dealers in Milwaukee face a new competitor in Eric's. Some of the smaller independents believe that the market is now saturated with bike shops, that there really isn't room for any more. And it'll be an interesting scene. One other twist on it is that this sort of brings into competition in the Milwaukee area the two largest bike brands in America, Trek and Specialized. Now, Trek is, of course, a Wisconsin-based company. They're kind of a, you know, the hometown guys. And Wheel and Sprocket is a Trek dealer. In fact, Wheel and Sprocket is one of the biggest Trek dealers in the country. Eric's is a Specialized dealer and is the largest Specialized dealer in the country. So it kind of looks like Specialized, which is based in California, Morgan Hill, California, near San Jose, it kind of looks like they want to challenge Trek in a prime Trek market, that being Milwaukee. So we'll see what happens. In some cases, the manufacturers, they back the dealers with a lot of support, and in exchange, the dealers will commit to doing the great majority of their business with that manufacturer.
What does this mean for bikers?
Well, for bikers, it's more selection for people for sure, and I think there are probably people who just like to go to different bike shops and see what they're like. So now you've got a wider variety, and the Eric stores, they look great. You know, nice layout, nice design, and it gives Milwaukee a broader selection of Specialized bicycles for sure.
Curious about that story? We'll have more as it develops this week. Keep an eye on jsonline.com/business for more. Republican legislators are leaving a financial plan for a new Milwaukee Bucks arena out of the budget. Editor Greg Borowski, columnist Daniel Bice and James Causey, and reporter Jason Stein talked about the future of an arena financing plan during their JS on Politics show Thursday.
We talked about it a couple weeks ago, and it's another one of these deals that maybe is a deal or not quite a deal. It's out of the budget. Jason, can you give us a sense of why they took that approach, and does that make it easier or harder for it to pass?
Well, I can tell you why they took that approach. They had no choice. I mean, they wanted to pass it as part of the budget. It would have been easier to pass it as part of the budget. You know, there's this lingering doubt about whether they can pass it at all outside the budget. But they had a majority of Republican senators saying, I do not want this provision as part of the state budget. And so there you go. It's out.
You know, it is interesting that the talk from Madison is that this thing is in jeopardy or that there's some questions about. But I've been in touch with the Bucks and with people close to Walker, and both of them remain incredibly confident that something's going to be done. The question is, does it happen this summer or does it happen in September? It's right. You know, some people are even giving me figures saying that they're sure it's 80% to 90% sure that it's going to get done, but it's a very different message that you hear in Madison.
Saying, I mean, how many times did the Brewers deal fall apart for Miller Park before it was done? So, I mean, are you nervous about this? I know you support a new arena,
right.
But
I support a new arena. I'm still very confident that it will get done. I just don't. I want to know which politician wants to be the person that votes against it and have the Bradley Center closed by the year 2030. And there's no Bradley Center, and then you look at the Park East, and it's abandoned still. I want to know.
There's lots of politicians who want to be the one to vote against it, right?
I mean, if you're from outstate
somewhere, you don't particularly care much if you can tell your taxpayers you're not giving money to the arena.
Right. I mean, this thing has been up and down in the Capitol. I mean, right now, I would say the sense that I am getting is that it can be passed through the state Senate. I think it can absolutely be passed through the state assembly. The question is the state Senate. I think it can get through. But hey, let me tell you, I mean, there are some people that are lining up to vote against it. And I'll tell you, they're the kinds of people like, say, Senator Rob Coles. He represents a district that had to, an area that had to tax itself to build Lambeau Field. And so he says, look, these are the Green Bay Packers. They're practically a sacred, part of Wisconsin. And we didn't get any state help. we had to build that for ourselves. And so, you know, a lot of people in his district and Rob himself just say, look, we don't think the Bucks deserve state income tax money any more than the Green Bay Packers did. So, I mean, there are just going to be people that are going to vote no for those reasons.
Two things. One, it was interesting. Even there, their vote on raising taxes for the Green Bay Packers, only 53% of the people voted for that, even though it's much more popular than the Bucks in the state. And then two, in 2010, 2011, the legislature passed a $5 million grant to give to the Bradley Center for the Bucks scoreboard, a very minor thing, something right. 1/100th right. the size of what we're talking about. And that was used as a political and campaign issue against a number of Democrats who voted for it. So a lot of people will be nervous that an arena deal for Milwaukee, it would hurt, you know, would be something that the voters in their district, it just won't resonate with.
But we know it's not just a Bucks arena, though. I mean, we need to quit talking about it like only the Bucks benefit. And there's the arena is open 280 plus days out of the season, out of a year, and the Bucks play there 42 games
You sound like Robin Voss. I mean, that's true. It has a lot of benefits.
I don't think I've ever been confused with Robin Voss before.
But the thing is, during election season, it's all about who's going to win this seat or that seat and what can you use against them.
That's true. I mean, everyone would agree, I think, that we need support from all the Milwaukee Democrats, right, to do this. And probably people like Alberta Darling and others who have a good stake in the in the region. So are the Milwaukee Democrats in the Senate behind it?
I mean, you have Senator Carpenter, who's running for alderman. He's already indicated that he's against. The other ones will probably get on board, but we talked earlier about the season of wheeling and dealing. The season of wheeling and dealing hasn't started on the Bucks arena. Yep. If I'm a Democrat in the Senate, I want something in return for voting for this.
To watch the full JS on Politics show, visit jsonline.com/politics. The show is also available as a podcast, and you can find that on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. The Milwaukee Brewers' 2015 season has been nothing short of a disaster. They are in last place in the National League Central and could end up with one of the worst records in baseball this season. Their focus at this point is to improve the team for 2016 and beyond. Matt Velasquez talks to Brewers beat writer Tom Hargecourt about those plans.
Tom, the calendar has flipped to July, which means major league teams have less than a month left to make deals before the non-waiver trade deadline at the end of the month. Considering the Brewers' struggles, they're expected to be sellers in the trade market so that they can start the rebuilding process. Who are some of the players that could be on their way out, and what can the Brewers hope to get in return?
The teams that define themselves as sellers, and the Brewers are definitely in that mode, always try to move players on the end of their contracts that they don't expect to be back next year first. Those are the so-called rentals that other teams will trade for to provide a boost. The issues that the Brewers have with that is that a lot of those guys aren't performing that well over the course of the whole season. Players like Kyle Loesch, Aramis Ramirez, Jonathan Broxton, they just aren't having very good years. Now, Ramirez has picked it up a little bit lately, and so has Loesch, so we'll see how that goes. You know, they also have outfielder Gerardo Parra, on the last year of his contract, the lefty Neil Kotz in their bullpen is also on a one-year deal. Those guys could have value to other teams. You know, what you get back for players like that, extra players or bullpen players, you would just probably hope to get, you know one semi-decent prospect that you could add to your farm system. Now, if they want to go for bigger trades and get maybe higher prospects, then you would think about moving players like Gene Segura, their shortstop, Carlos Gomez, their center fielder. Those are both interesting guys because while it would hurt to trade either one of them or both, it would make a lot of sense. Shortstop is the position of strength in the Brewers organization. They have a lot of really quality shortstops in their farm system. Orlando Arcia, who is generally considered to be their top prospect, is playing in Double-A, and a lot of people think he could jump right to the big leagues. So if they got offered the right deal for Segura, even though he's a talented young player, 3 years away from free agency, they might be tempted to move him. With Carlos Gomez, you have a situation where he's got 1 year left on his contract, and then he probably will be too expensive for them to keep after that. so they could maybe get something more for him too, because then a team wouldn't just be renting him for the rest of this year. They would be getting him for next year as well. So we'll see just how deep into their roster the Brewers want to trade. There's the obvious suspects, but then there's some other ones that would be more painful to trade.
At this point in the season, is it more about checking to see which players can improve their trade stock or evaluating up-and-coming talent on the field?
Well, their object is still to win, and I guarantee you that's manager Craig Counsell's objective every night. You know, he's just 2 months into the job. All managers are judged on, you know, what they do on the field, and so he wants to win. But he also knows, because he came out of the front office, that you have to also look down the road as well. So a lot will depend on, you know, what they do with their roster in July. If they move several players, they might, you know, move younger players into those spots, and then it'll be all about, you know, making judgments, moving forward, and developing players at the big league level. So I'm sure they'd like to do a mix of both, you know, keep a core of decent talent in the big leagues, and then, you know, get a look at some players that might have roles in the team's future. So it's going to be fascinating. The teams that, you know, that are always the most interesting to cover from a reporter's perspective are the good teams, because, you know, they're heading for the playoffs, or the teams that are really, that got off the bad starts like the Brewers, because you know they're probably going to do things with their roster. So, and then, you know, to throw something else into the equation, the Brewers, you know, it looks like Doug Melvin's not coming back as general manager. If he was, I think they would have said it by now. So there's going to be a transition at the top of the baseball operations as well. How fast they announce that and how fast they're able to bring a new general manager in, I don't know. But that's the other thing the Brewers have going on that's going to be fascinating, is it looks like we're heading into a transition period with their baseball leadership as well.
And that concludes this week's Behind the Headlines podcast. Thanks for listening.
This is Amy Brown from Feeling Things with Amy and Kat. Back to school season always feels like a fresh start, not just for kids, but for all of us. It's a great reminder to create new routines and find meaningful ways to connect with our family, friends, and community. Hasbro Games make it easy to gather around the table. Put the screens away, share some laughs, and create joyful memories together. Whether it's Monopoly, Connect Four, Guess Who, or another family favorite, there's something for everyone. You can find these and other Hasbro favorites at your local Walmart, walmart.com, or simply tap the link in today's show notes to bring more play into your week.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.